All right, y'all, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of Hashtag CB99 Talks. I'm Combo Breaker 99, and I'm back with another boxing episode for y'all, man. We had a fight overload, man. We had a pretty good night of fights, you know, in MMA and boxing. You know, we had different apps showing different fights, ESPN, DAZN, Fox. You know, we had four different fights, and some of the fights were decent. You know, not all of them were great, but I mean, you know, they definitely were some highlights, you know, going down. And I just want to go back and talk about some of these fights on the cards. You know, we had Eleider Alvarez versus Joe Smith Jr. You know, I'm a fan of the light heavyweight division. It's kind of one of the slept on divisions with a lot of talent, you know, and I think that a lot of people are missing out on good fights. You know, they missed out on a good one Saturday, you know, if they didn't tune in. DAZN had what else? What else did DAZN have? They had, oh yeah, Dillian White versus Alexander Povetkin. You know, that was like the highlight. You know, that was like the highlight heavyweight knockout of the weekend. So let's talk about that a little bit. What else? Katie Taylor versus Delphine Pursuing, the rematch, of course. You know, that was a highly anticipated rematch. So let's talk about that. The return of Sean Porter versus Sebastian Firmella. Did y'all like this fight? You know, did you think this was a big improvement on Sean's style from what you've seen? So yeah, we'll talk about all that, man. But yeah, going back to Eleider Alvarez versus Joe Smith Jr. real quick. You know, Eleider Alvarez, like a few years back, he was considered a big threat to a lot of the light heavyweights, even before he faced Kovalev. You know, he was a guy that Adonis Stevenson, you know, was supposed to have to fought maybe like two or three times, but it was reported that he was given step aside money so Adonis Stevens could fight somebody else or defend his title against somebody else. But Eleider Alvarez, you know, I always felt like he was a good counterpuncher, and you know, he had a good, strong style about him. You know, I always felt like he could bring something that was gonna really take over some of these guys in light heavyweight division. He was able to do that against Sergey Kovalev, but you know, since then, you know, he lost the title and he's just kind of been on an up and down. And you know, against Joe Smith Jr., Joe Smith Jr., I know he's not like this big standout guy. You know, he's not like some of these other highlight reel type fighters. You know, these guys with the gifts like Artur Beterbiev or Dmitry Bivol. You know, he really reflects like his work life. You know, Joe Smith Jr. was a construction worker, and when he gets in the ring, he works. You know, he's a hard worker in the ring, and consistent hard work like that is something you can't sleep on. You know, I feel like Eleider Alvarez, he's got that IQ. You know, he's got that IQ that's a little bit higher than Joe Smith in some ways. As a, you know, he's a better counterpuncher, but Joe Smith has that grit. You know, he had that grit that he showed on Saturday night that was a little too much for Eleider Alvarez. You know, Joe Smith, he just did what he had to do for nine rounds. I mean, he pretty much washed Eleider Alvarez up until round nine. You know, he just outgunned him in the jab department. He stayed busy. It was like Eleider Alvarez didn't really come up with like a game plan except waiting for one big right hand. Kind of like how he was doing in the Kovalev rematch. You know, in the Kovalev rematch, Kovalev came back to box more, and it was just like he didn't have an answer for like volume punching. And he kind of showed that in this fight. He didn't have an answer for volume punches. So Joe Smith Jr. just came with everything he had. You know what I mean? And the shots he's throwing are very hard and very strong because he was really busting the leader Alvarez up to like fifth round. He just had like this big spot of blood on his nose from just taking consistent jabs and right hands. And then Eleider Alvarez was just back at, getting backed up into the ropes while Joe Smith was just pinning him there and like hooking around the side, coming up the middle with the uppercut. And I would say like Eleider Alvarez, he definitely had the power to hurt Joe Smith. I remember he caught him maybe like once or twice in like the mid rounds, and he kind of stunned Joe Smith a little bit, but he didn't follow up with it. You know, and that's his thing. Like he doesn't really follow up enough. Like he'll throw a combination here and there, but he's not a busy fighter. So, you know, Joe Smith, him being a workman, he's just going to come in there and break you down. You know, that's what he does. That's what he did to even old B-Hop. he tried that with Sullivan Barrera, but you know, Barrera, he's much stronger and you know, he can work just as hard. But Joe Smith just came in there and did what he had to do against Leader Alvarez, you know, constantly broke it, beat him to the punch, broke him down, and then finished him with that big right hand, straight left combination that nearly sent Leader Alvarez out of the ropes. Like when he was laying there, it was like, I know he's probably just supporting his head. It almost looked like he was just laying back on vacation because, like, as a referee counted, he didn't even look like he was urgent, you know, in an urgent manner to get up. So, you know, when he got up by 9, the referee just said, oh, that's it. You know, he got counted out. But it was a good performance. You know, like I said, I like to see these names like Smith and Alvarez mix it up in the light heavyweight division. I think it's a lot of talent in that division. And moving on from here, you know, Joe Smith, he's probably going to be looking for a title shot because this was a WBO title eliminator. But I heard somewhere that he could be fighting Artur Beterbiev next. You know, Beterbiev has the IBF and WBC titles, so why not just go ahead and put that WBO up, you know, for grabs as well? That would be interesting. You know, we get closer to having somebody with 3 belts. So I think that would be an interesting fight for how long is it it's going to last. But I think that Beterbiev, he's much stronger and much more powerful than Joe Smith, you know, and I think that his durability is like off the charts. You know, Beterbiev, he can stay in there, he can absorb punches, but at the same time, he knows that he can come back and hurt you, you know, and that's what keeps him in the game. You know, he has like a boxer puncher style where he's kind of flat footed at times, but he knows how to be slick and counter punch you, you know. So I think Joe Smith is going to have his hands full. But if Joe Smith is able to work like he was able to do in this fight, use his reach and then go on inside and bang with Beterbiev, you know, here and there. But he don't want to stay in there too long. But if he's able to kind of nullify the jab with somebody like Beterbiev, I think that, you know, Joe Smith could make it a tough fight for Beterbiev. But it's going to be good if it happens. I know that Beterbiev has a fight coming up. I want to say October. He has a title defense coming up. So who knows? They might be fighting in 2021, you know. So let me know in the comment section, guys, what y'all thought of this fight. Like I said, it was a good knockout. It was a good 9th round knockout for Joe Smith Jr. Definitely you should push him into a title shot realm. I don't know who he's going to fight for the vacant title, but, you know, we'll see. Yeah, man, going on to the DAZN card, I did my post-fight analysis for Katie Taylor versus Delphine pursuing the rematch. But real quick, we'll go back and talk about it. First question, you know, I have for y'all out there, as well as a question I'm going to answer myself now, is was it a close fight or was it just competitive? You know, because first time around, I felt like Katie Taylor, she did lose the first fight with Delphine Pursoon. I feel like Delphine Pursoon just really came in there and showed Katie another level of dog. You know, she showed her something that Katie Taylor didn't expect. You know, Katie didn't expect her to just come in there and dog her the way she did with such a physical fight. And she probably didn't expect her to hit as hard as she could. You know, Katie probably got so used to outboxing a lot of these ladies out here and just putting on like a boxing clinic that whenever somebody just came in there and totally disrespected her boxing and was just able to just handle her so fluidly and like, maybe like I'd say probably like 7 or 8 of the rounds of their first fight, you know, that's what really shocked Katie, you know. So that first go round, I really did have Delphine Pursoon winning that fight because I felt like she landed some damaging punches. She hurt Katie, and I think she just won like at least 7 rounds in that first fight, you know. But this time going around, you know, Katie Taylor, her being the boxer, and having that IQ to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, we're dealing with this type of pressure fighter. We really got to clean this up. You know, we got to clean up the head movement. We got to know when to let go, when to move, when to hold. So every time you look at a rematch between a boxer and a pressure fighter, a boxer and a puncher, you can really expect the boxer to be the one to make more improvements, you know, because sometimes that pressure fighter is just doing just that. You know, they come in there as just a fighter, you know? So sometimes they won't come back in there with that same fight, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? They may have blew their whole fight in that one go round, but they might not be able to step it up next time because they were fighting off so much grit, emotion, and heart that sometimes they won't go back to the drawing board and think it's like a technical thing. You know, they won't go back to the drawing board and say, okay, as a pressure fighter, I need to not smother my jab as much, or I need to cut the ring off a little bit more. I need to faint with my jab and get her to walk into the right hand when she turns to the left. Little things like that, you know. So when you think about it, like I said, boxers, they're the ones that are going to really go back because they're the ones really being technical about it. They're the ones seeing the angles more so in the judgment of range. So I think Katie, this time around, she really went back to the drawing board and tried her best. She tried her damnedest to make this fight more so go in her favor. And she did, in my opinion. I feel like Katie Taylor did win this rematch. I got to say, it wasn't as close either. I think it was really competitive, and she really went through hell to earn it. Because like I said in my post-fight analysis, I broke it down, man. I say it was probably 6-4. I say 6-4 convincingly, or maybe even 7-3 for Katie. You know, I think there was just a lot of roughhousing in there from Delphine Persoon. And, you know, that was a lot of the movement that really burned a lot of energy of Katie Taylor out. But I think Katie overall landed the better punches. She made the better adjustments this go round. And again, like I was saying about fighters, some pressure fighters sometimes not making improvements, Delphine Persoon didn't really make any improvements this time. You know, she didn't really come in there with a game plan to do what she did the first time and then clean it up. You know, because a lot of the work she did in the first fight was a little bit, some of it was accurate, some of it was messy. So this time around, she should have cleaned it up to make it a little bit more accurate, you know. And I think that Delphine Persoon didn't really work on, I guess I would say like her punch placement. You know, there were sometimes she would lob that right hand and she would miss by miles, or sometimes it would just seem like it would just go really off target. And then there was times that she would walk in just punching, like as she was walking, she would just like punch at the same time as she walked, which to me, you know, that's taking away a lot of energy. And at the same time, your opponent sees that coming, so they're just going to duck it. And, you know, Katie really did show a lot of good head movement this time. You know, she was moving her head a lot. She was, you know, ducking a lot of shots. You could see her face. It didn't really come out too bad except for that big hematoma on the forehead. I think that was like a headbutt, you know, from whenever Delphine came in one time. But again, the punch placement of Katie was a lot better. The accuracy was better. You know, she was landing some good left hooks in that second round, and she busted Delphine's face with that one good left hook. And then like the right side of her face started swelling. And then just looking at the rounds, man, look at all the close work in there. You can see Katie going to the body, stepping in and out, you know, landing her jab. It wasn't really to like, I would say, well, first off, the first half of the fight, I had Katie Taylor winning it like 5 rounds to 0. You know, I think that Katie boxed beautifully in such a rough dog fight. You know, she was able to box, even though it was a hard first 5 rounds. But that second half of the fight, that's where Delphine really did step it up, because Katie slowed down. And that's what a pressure fighter needs to do. You know, they need to go ahead and put the body work together, which Delphine didn't do. And she probably could have got her to slow down earlier. But like round 6, 7, and 8, Katie did slow down. So Delphine started catching up with the long shots. You know, she started hitting her with some good straight shots. And then on the inside, she'd work her and hit her to the side of the head, and, you know, kind of throw Katie off a little bit, throw her rhythm off. And her long jab is good. Like Delphine, if she would commit to it more, she would have touched Katie a lot more. Because Katie's fast, but she wasn't fast enough to get completely out of the range at times, you know. And I think that's what was, that's why it's always a close fight for Katie. Because, you know, Katie can't get completely out of there. And she's not as strong as Delphine, you know, because you can really see Delphine's a strong fighter. This is her thing. But, like, Katie had to be so physical in there with Delphine that her legs were gone half the time. That's why she was so tired. And then after that, when you get like to the eighth and ninth round, you know, Delfina's catching her with these big long shots, you know. But I'd say like in the championship rounds, they were kind of split. I think Katie won round nine. And then I think round 10 went to Delfina just because she really turned it up. She turned it up trying to go in, and, you know, and close the show. But, yeah, all in all for me, I had it as a unanimous decision for Katie. I think she did win it 6-4. Not close, but she really had to work for it. You know, and I think there's a big difference that close would say that, you know, would have to be like a draw, like 5-5. And, you know, there had to be rounds where they were so close. But I think that the 6 rounds that Katie did win, she completely outboxed Delphine in a very, very physical fight. You know, she really had to earn those punches. She really had to earn the higher output of punches, you know, when it came down to it. But, moving on from here, man, you know, Katie Taylor, I still want to see her fight Amanda Serrano. Hopefully that fight comes to fruition. Delphine Persoon, you know, she's still a tough fighter, but I think there's a lot of improvements that can be made, you know, just because of her style, her, you know, her pressure fighting style. It can be so much more intimidating to fighters. You know, if she's looking at people like Mike Tyson or Joe Frazier, you know, she likes to come in there moving her head early on, but she needs to be more consistent and a little bit more precise with the punches. You know, look at Joe Frazier, look at Golovkin even, you know, Golovkin, because she kind of has that frame like Golovkin where she knows she's walking you down, and then she needs to be more accurate, more powerful with that jab. You know, she needs more power behind the jab. But yeah, man, overall, that was a good fight to me. You know, I think that their style matchups always make for good fights. So, you know, hopefully Katie can find more fighters like this to fight, because it's definitely going to put on a show. But let me know in the comment section what y'all thought of the fight. Do you think that Delphine won the fight, or do you think Katie Taylor won the fight? Honestly, this time, I personally think it's 1-1, even though Katie's won both, but I think it's 1-1. But, yeah, man, moving on, Dillian White versus Alexander Povetkin. Like I said, I was telling people I'm not really a big fan of these two, you know, especially after both of them got popped. But, you know, whenever they come to fight, whenever they're clean, you know, they put on a good show. You know, I think that Dillian White, a while back, I was kind of vouching for Dillian White getting the title shot because he had fought like 9-10 fights in a row. And, you know, he had been, you know, wanting this title shot, you know, either Wilder or rematch with Anthony Joshua. So I was like, cool, you know, I think he should get it, you know, just by looking at his resume. But then he just started doing crazy crap, you know, getting popped. He got popped like 2 or 3 times in a row, and then they tried to cover that up. Then he just started talking like major trash about Wilder. Like, it wasn't even like, I want to fight, you know, he's just going off the deep end, trolling, talking nonsense. So, you know, that just kind of made me lose a little bit of respect for him there, you know, because it wasn't about the fight anymore. He's just talking crazy. But Povetkin, same with him. You know, after he got popped, I wasn't really feeling him anymore. But I can't lie, man, he is an educated boxer, you know, and he showed that Saturday night. You know, he showed that even at 40 years old, you know, he can still compete. And, you know, it's the heavyweight division, so more than likely, you know, he still got the power. But I think Povetkin, man, like, he showed a lot of older people something, you know, a lot of older fighters something that, you know, even if you get knocked down, as long as you got a plan in the making and you know you got the skill, eventually you can catch up to a fighter. Because I saw his plan. I saw his plan from the jump, which is crazy, man. I talked about this in my post-fight analysis, but I'm talking about it a little bit more. But, like, right from the jump, man, from the first round, just the way that Povetkin was – you know, right after his jab and he was getting in on Dillian White, he'd go to the body with his left hook. I was like, okay, I know what he's doing here. You know, he just kept that consistent, you know, style. You know, he stayed consistent with it, kept jabbing throughout second and third round. And every time he'd go back to the midsection, Dillian White, he's still taking these left hooks to the body. Dillian White's still getting his shots in there too. You know, he's stepping in, landing some big right hands on Povetkin. You know, Povetkin, he's a good boxer, but his defense isn't that good. You know, his head can still be on the line, and he can still be in range to eat a lot of shots. You know, if you go back and look at, you know, quite a few of his fights and his losses to Joshua and Klitschko. He can be a heavy bag sometime. I'll be honest whenever it comes to the head, but you know, he's a good counterpuncher. He can set up shots as well. But in this fight, man, I was like, okay, I know what he's doing here. You know, he keeps setting this left hook up to the body. And eventually I was like, he's gonna go upstairs. I know it's coming. Might not be now, but it might be it could be down the road in the later rounds. But Dillian White, he surprised me, man. I thought it was going to be over in like the fourth round whenever he landed a pair of right hands on Povetkin, and then he landed that left hook, and Povetkin just like dropped. You know, he took the two right hands in that left hook, said, okay, it's time to go down. So he went down. I was like, okay, Dillian White's going to jump on him from here. But Dillian didn't completely jump on him. Like, he didn't completely just unleash a barrage on him. You know, he kind of let Povetkin come back a little bit. Povetkin put pressure on him, backed him to the ropes. Dillian White comes up with a left uppercut, and he drops Povetkin. So I'm like, okay, this is it. You know, but Povetkin gets back up. So I'm like, Dillian, go ahead and jump on him. Like, Dillian still did not try to close the show in this fourth round. I don't know if he was getting gassed or what, but he should have jumped on Povetkin in this fourth round. Because I was like, Povetkin's getting dropped, but he's not completely out. You can see it in his face. He still has his plan to make, and he's not going anywhere with it. So Povetkin went back to boxing. End of the round, come to the fifth round. Povetkin's coming in a range on Dillian White. He drops. Dillian White drops with his guard up. He comes up. It looks like he's throwing that left hook to the body. No, he comes up with that left hook. That left uppercut splits the guard on Dillian White, stiffs him right to the chin. That big left uppercut right to the chin. Dillian White is stiff on the way down. He hits the canvas, and he is out. You know, the referee didn't even count. He was out. And I already heard some, you know, news online where they were saying that Dillian White felt like he was cheated because he didn't get a count. But I thought he was out. You know, personally, I thought he was out, you know, because they were comparing it even to the Tyson Fury thing. But even with that, like, I felt like Tyson Fury was out in the first fight. Like, I thought the referee just kind of extended the count a little bit for Tyson Fury, you know, but I thought Tyson Fury got knocked out. But anyway, Dillian White, when he got hit with this one, man, he was stiff. He was stiff and he was out, man. I was just like, yeah, wow. But and that's what I'm talking about. Like, somebody like Povetkin, even if he got popped before, I feel like he's an educated boxer and he was just setting up a good like left hook feint. You know, sooner or later he was going to go from the body to the head. You know, sometimes I see a lot of videos, people are posting Canelo using that a lot, you know, where he's hits you to the body, then sometimes he'll feint like he's going to throw to the body, then he'll throw it to the head, you know. So, and the ones to the head, you won't expect it, you know, that, and that's what makes him hurt even more. But yeah, it was a good fight. It was a good knockout. It possibly could be knockout of the year. I think from here, you know, this is going to lead to a title shot for Povetkin, as long as he don't get popped anymore. But, yo, Dillian White, like I said, man, he need to focus, man. He got to focus. He was on a good path for a while with those consistent fights. But, you know, he's just been kind of trying to build himself up too much, with all this trolling and talking. So now he's kind of got to go back and climb back up once again, you know. But if they have a rematch, I check it out. You know, if Povetkin wants to give him a rematch, shoot, I'll check it out. But, yeah, man, let me know what y'all thought of this fight in the comment section as well. And do you want to see Povetkin fight the winner of Wilder Fury 3 or Fury Wilder 3, whatever? Do you want to see Povetkin in that fight? I think it would be kind of interesting. I don't know, you know. All right, and last fight I wanted to talk about was Sean Porter versus Sebastian Formella. This was Sean Porter, his return after 11 months off since his split decision loss to Errol Spence Jr. And I know a lot of people wanted to see Sean in there with the top caliber of opponent, which I did. So, you know, I was kind of in the same boat with a lot of people where they were feeling like, okay, you know, this is Sean Porter, you know, we expect more from him. But I can't really blame him at this time right now, you know, because not everybody's wanting to fight right now, you know. And Errol Spence, Danny Garcia, you know, they're already booked to fight. Danny Ugas, I'm not sure if he is booked to fight. you know, but I don't know why, you know, I guess they didn't want to give him a rematch. You know, Keith Thurman, he's still not in there. And, you know, the best fight that everybody wanted to see after him losing to Errol Spence was Terrence Crawford. But Terrence Crawford doesn't want that fight, you know, which I think is crazy. You know, when it comes down to it, I don't know what's the game a lot of these fighters are playing as far as their move, they're making moves in here as far as their chess game. Like, I don't know why it always has to be one specific opponent they need before they get to the titles or to the top that they want. I'm just like, y'all need to fight everybody. You know, y'all seen Evander do it. You seen Andre Ward do it. You know, they don't play that like complacent game where it's like, okay, I'm not fighting this guy. I want this guy instead. But this guy is available. You know, fighter A is available, but you don't want him. Instead, you want to wait for fighter B, who's like over the hill and, you know, already been beaten by the champion that you eventually want, you know. So I just think those kind of moves are crazy. Like, if Sean Porter's available, just take him. You know, just take the fight with him. Why make this so difficult? But Sean couldn't get that fight, so he's taking on an undefeated Sebastian Formella. I know a lot of people aren't familiar with him. I've seen him box like a couple times, you know, just on checking out fights on YouTube. But Formella, he's actually like – this is actually his first fight in the U.S. You know, I want to say he's fought all his fights in Germany. So, you know, he's never really seen anything outside of Germany when it comes to, you know, the top-level champions, you know, like top-level welterweight competition. So going into this fight, like a lot of people, my pick for it was Sean Porter is going to steamroll this guy in either like the mid or late round stoppage with a mid or late round stoppage. Like, when it all comes down to, if you look at Sean Porter, technically he's not like a concussive knockout artist. You know, he's not like a one hitter quitter guy, but I felt like he had the physical strength to wear and tear this guy down. But Sebastian Formella, man, he showed something, man. He showed a lot of skill in there, man. He showed a lot of durability as far as, you know, being able to weather whatever Sean was bringing and still move. You know what I mean? Like, he's taking ferocious body shots in there, but he's still moving them legs. Like, the first couple of rounds, he won the jab and find his range against Sean a little bit. But, you know, Sean is a quicker boxer. And Sean's been using that boxing style a little bit more and more, and he's been trying to improve on it. He's still in and out with it, which is good. He's finding his range. He's not smothering his punches as much. You know, he knows how to jab and then, like, clip him with them body shots from a good distance. I'm like, yeah, Sean's improving. Like, he was able to work on some things in this 12-round fight, which I think is definitely going to help him the more and more he gets in there with more elite guys. You know, like, if he eventually does want to fight Ugas in a rematch, I think that Sean, his boxing is definitely going to help him against a guy like Ugas this time around. You know, I think he's kind of learning from those mistakes he made in that last fight with Ugas. But you could definitely see the difference in caliber of opponent from a Ugas versus a Formella. You know, Formella, strong and durable. He's a durable guy, but he's not physically strong like Ugas. You know, Ugas is able to stalk you and walk you down. He's more of a built, bigger, wider guy who can kind of, you know, shotgun jab you back or just throw that straight right hand and knock you back. And that's what he was able to do against Sean Porter. You know, Formella, he didn't have them type of tools. You know, he's more of a boxer from the outside, more of a mover. So he never really had a chance to just sit down on shots and really get the respect from Sean. So Sean was just having a field day working on things, you know, tearing that body up, going up the middle with the uppercuts and just putting on that pressure boxing style, but less football-esque, less of that bum rushing style on you. You know, he wasn't really like stutter stepping and then sprinting in. You know, he fought at a good pace. But yeah, from here, man, like I think that Sean Porter, he deserves a fight with another elite fighter. You know, I think he could either get I think he deserves the winner of Spence Garcia, Manny Pacquiao, a rematch with Keith Thurman, any of these guys. Because the one thing about Keith Thurman that I want to bring up here is that, excuse me, not Keith Thurman, Sean Porter. The one thing I want to say about Sean Porter is he always holds his own. You know, he's always consistent as far as, like, fighting the best fighters. Like, he probably has the best resume out of all the welterweights. Win or lose, you know, he's fought everybody. You know, if you look at, like, his last 10, 11 fights, like, that's impressive. They're all names. They're all champions or former champions. And the thing is, like, you know, Sean reminds me of one of those kids in school. Like, some of those other guys that you see, they're so in and out sometimes. Sometimes they pass, sometimes they fail. But, you know, Sean's just, like, on a direct path. Like, Sean's always getting his A's and B's and trying to graduate. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to learn and just get the hell out, you know? You know, he don't want to be held back. You know, he's not trying to pick and choose what he does. He's just going with the flow but making himself better. Like, Sean, like, I know a lot of people, like I said before, they don't like his style. But, I like his style. You know, I feel like he comes to bring excitement. You know, he's always coming in there to box. So he's coming in to fight. You don't know what to expect from him. And that's why I say, like, he does this against elite guys. So, after fighting this fight with Formella, I think he deserves a fight with, you know, three of those guys. Like I mentioned, you know, Thurman, Pacquiao. I think he, you know, deserves a fight with Pacquiao, yeah, and the winner is Spence Garcia, because he's always staying there, man. He's always staying there. He's always been in that realm. He's always doing something to prove that he belongs in that realm. Like, people are mad at him fighting for Melo. Well, he had to fight for Melo until he, you know, one of these other guys calls him out. And right now, you know, guys like Crawford that are really free or looking for a fight don't want it. You know, so you can't really blame Sean in this position. You got to blame the other fighters who were more so picking and choosing, or, you know, just not ready to fight. You know, like, out of that past 11 months, I'd say Sean, he probably was ready to fight, but most of these other guys, they weren't. And, you know, I know Ugas, he wants a rematch. He wants a rematch with Sean. And I wouldn't say, if Sean don't want to fight right now, I can't really say Sean is ducking him. Because Sean did pass that test. I mean, very narrow. You know, it's very narrow. But I think Sean does have the choice to say, no, I want a title shot next. You know, Sean has been through too much to say, okay, I have to go back and fight Ugas again. Nah, he don't have to do that. He beat him already now. Already, so let him get another title shot. Because he's one of the only guys that wants to stay consistent. But, yeah, man, that's pretty much all I got on this episode. Like I said, I just wanted to go back and talk about these boxing matches that happened. And really quick, going back up to Katie Taylor, like the Katie Taylor-Delphine fight. How good do you guys think Katie Taylor is? That was another question I wanted to ask y'all. Like, I think Katie is impressive with some of her boxing, but, like, for a fighter the way Delphine was able to get to her, I know styles make fights, but the way she was able to get to her in both of these fights, like, how good do you guys think Katie Taylor really is? Like, do you think she'll be able to wash some of these other ladies? Like, when she takes on Amanda Serrano, like, do you think she'll be able to handle somebody like Amanda Serrano, somebody that's much stronger, much more precise with her punches? You know, somebody that's, you know, ran through like seven divisions. You know, do you think that she'll be able to handle a style like Amanda brings to the table? But yeah, man, that's pretty much all I got as far as the fights that I wanted to talk about. But real quick, you know, I know the last news I heard was that, you know, Terrence Crawford, he really is in negotiations with Kell Brook now, which I think is crazy. You know, I just think that man, like, it's a fight that I guess I'll take, and like all the fans will take, you know, because we have no choice. But whenever Keith Thurman just brought up Terrence Crawford's name and the whole I signed the contract on IG Live, we were just all like, let's make that fight. You know, let's get that fight. Let's get Crawford Thurman now. You know, that fight makes so much more sense than Crawford Brook. You know, and I know that Crawford threw such a – not Crawford, but I know Thurman he threw a wild number out there, like $10 million. But to me, that's just like a negotiating point. If a guy throws out $10 million, you're not just going to give it to him. You're going to say, oh, that's a little steep, man. What about five? You know, then he might say, what about nine? And then you say, what about six? He says, what about eight? And you say something like, what about 6.5 or 6.8 million? And then finally, like, he starts to come into agreement. You know, that's how it's supposed to work out. But it was just like they just shut the door as soon as he said $10 million, you know, and I was just kind of like, who doesn't want to fight? Like, who doesn't want this fight? You know, why has it got to be this hard to make a good fight? You know, and for them to say that Keith Thurman is not credible, come on, the guy was unified champion, has just finished fighting a close fight with Pacquiao, you know. I know that he's been coming in boxing in and out as far as, you know, with the injuries and everything. But I think that he's definitely a lot more durable than Kell Brook. Kell Brook is damaged goods. He hasn't fought at, what, welterweight in like 3 years? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's like 3 years now. He hasn't made 147 in 3 years, and we want that fight. And I think two broken eye sockets are worse than like a bad elbow or a bad hand, which is all Keith Thurman has, you know? So I think that Keith Thurman, he's still like in a mindset where he wants to get back into the game. You know, I think he really wants to make this fight. And my last suggestion too about the fight is that, okay, let's take that $10 million that Keith Thurman said he wanted, and let's say, Keith, you can't have this $10 million, but we will make this fight. You can have it. We're going to split that $10 million up, five for Crawford, five for Thurman, and let that be it. You know, let's just make it a 50-50 fight. And, you know, let's say Thurman does have that stock on the PBC side. You know, you look at his numbers versus a Crawford, whose numbers are, you know, he's a champion, but his numbers aren't as good as Thurman, you know, pay-per-view wise. You know, Crawford does have some high, like, million views on, like, televised fights, you know, but not really when it comes to pay-per-view. So I think it should just be 50-50 at this point. You know, I think that it really should just be 50-50. Just make the damn fight. Because I want to see this style matchup, man. Like, there's so many good fighters in welterweight, but they're not mixing it up enough, man. Like, UFC is putting them to shame, man. Like, we're already getting Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis and on November 28th. And next month, we're getting Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa, you know. So all of these matches that I say I want to see are happening there. But, like, when you say a Thurman Crawford, it's like, no, nah, that can't happen. No, nah, that's not going to happen. So many matches that we're just missing out on because it's all about the money and the egos going on in boxing. But yeah, let me know what you guys think. Do y'all like the fact that negotiations are going with Crawford Book? Let me know in the comment section. I personally don't like it. I want Crawford Thurman now. But yeah, guys, that's all I got on this one. Make sure y'all follow me here. I'll post everything up as always. Combo Breaker 99 on Instagram. All Boxing Everything on Instagram. You know, that's why I call these segments All Boxing Everything. And follow my other podcast, the Jab Podcast. You can also follow the Instagram for that at the Jab Effect, which I post all that right there. But yeah, man, I'm Combo Breaker 99, and I'll be back with a women's MMA episode for y'all. I'm out. Peace.